Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I am delighted to welcome to the show my friend Barbara Gahn-Mueller, who is here to discuss the engineering of consent, which is important. And she's going to share how you know the benefits of your product or your service and then get consent from people to buy into your ideas or your products. It's a very important topic, and I can't wait to hear what she's got to say. And time permitting, we're also going to touch on the power of peace, which is very, very important to her, and it should be to the world as well. Now, Barbara is the founder and president of Gahn Global Public Relations, which is now celebrating its 25th year and has received Best PR Firm 5 years in a row. She is also the co-CEO of Revolutionary Conversations, LLC, and her partner, Mark Fowler, was my guest, I think, in August. We had a fascinating conversation. And Barbara is also an expert at using her mentor, Edward Bernays' Engineering of Consent, as I mentioned, to help clients understand and orchestrate the steps from awareness to information about the benefits of a product or a service to persuasion to buy or use the service. Any of us who are in business have product services, we need to know how to do this without really offending people. That's a big problem with social media these days. You can go sideways very, very quickly. Good morning, Barbara. I'm so excited to have you on your Partner in Success Radio. Let's go.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Denise. In our pre-interview, you said something which is right at the heart of public relations. You can't sit on your wisdom or your gifts. It doesn't do the world a bit of good. And I love that. So I said, I'm going to quote you, Denise, and there you are. We are off to the races to talk about how we can bring your audience, which must be in the millions. I have been watching and looking online at the guests that you've had. I've even quoted them, the quotes that makes your life a million times better, and I'm the guru that can help you. Those are the words that bring you success. Believe in yourself, and you will be amazed at the opportunities that kind of are like a magnet that come to you, like you, Denise, inviting me to be on your show. This is a powerful moment.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited. I mean, we're working together. We're friends. We've got a lot going on in the background, but you have this fascinating story that before we get started, because I do have questions for you, before we get started, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself? Because you've got this astonishing story. I mean, I look at your story and go, I know her? Wow, I'm so proud of myself right now. You know, you just, sometimes you just go, I know the most amazing people, and it's just such a blessing.
The magic to know amazing people. You are always out there in the world, no matter where you are. You are you. Be who you are. Be that fabulous person that was born to do something special on the planet. And that's kind of what I do, regardless of where I am. But it was interesting because my heart is in peace. My heart is in helping people become more peaceful. And so that heart of mine was at La Casa de Maria, where we created, that's a retreat center in Santa Barbara, and we created an invitational for world leaders, because I said to the board where I had served for 25 years, where do world leaders go to heal? They're always on. They don't get a chance to be who they are. So my board said, go, have a world leader conference. So we created the invitational, and Robert Mueller showed up. This fabulous man who just created the University for Peace in Costa Rica, and he was one of our speakers and one of the people who was an invitational inviter. he invited 100 world leaders. He was at the top of the world as the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations, serving for over 40 years. My life was a new life after meeting this man, and I'll tell you more, because I used the engineering of consent to make him even more important to the world, and I'll tell you more about that if there's time.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, your story is so fascinating, and you have so much to share. If we run out of time, don't worry about it. I'll get you to come back. So I want you to say whatever it is that you need to say, share whatever wisdom you have to share with the audience. This doesn't have to be a one and done. So just do it. You know, you need to do what feels comfortable.
Oh, thank you. Well, he was the one who, when we were at the Invitational in 1994, there were 2,000 days to the year 2000. Perfect opportunity for PR. So I stood up in front of these world leaders and I said, there are 2,000 days to the year 2000. Awareness, that's the first step in the engineering of consent. Information. If each of you give me one idea that will make this world better, I'll publish the book in the year 2000. We have 2,000 days to the year 2000. Well, they looked at me and they looked excited, but Robert Mueller, at that point, was my friend, just stood up and said, I'll do it. And I realized, you have persuasion to do something. And he was the only one that was persuaded, probably because he had a million ideas from working at the top of the world, creating the World Food Program, which was on NPR last night, creating the International Day of Peace, September 21. So he was full of ideas. So he stood up and said, I'll do it. And I said, okay, let's do it. That began our relationship. By the time the year 2000 came around, we had over 7,500 ideas, not just 2,000. And I'm kept thinking as about maybe around idea 1,400, what can we do to let the world know about these ideas? And we came up with the idea of Good Morning World, a free online public relations attempt to get his ideas out into the world. And it was on a free goodmorningworld.org email every single morning with good news, ideas you can use, and inspiration. Well, there you go. We spent the next 17 years together traveling the world. And I kept thinking, why is it this man is appointed to all these commissions? He is receiving Nobel Peace Prize nominations. And I was thinking, if he can do it, what can I do? And so in 2010, he passed away. And I was very sad. But I realized my work had just begun. I had 17 years of working with this fabulous man, and I was a PR person. I had started my PR company after I ran for political office in 1985. So you see, my company is probably a little more than 25 years now. And there's just so much I could tell you. But the most important part was I decided to continue his work, and I work for peace. Wrote the book with Mark Fowler, one of your guests, a beautiful podcast, talking about how we can have that conversation that will bring us into harmony together. Every day we talk, but how do you have the tools to help you have an inspiring conversation? As Lynn Twist was one of our people I spoke with, but Lynn Kitchen said, we are in relationships with ourselves, with each other, with Mother Earth. And you know your book? I have to say, this has changed my life. I only had this book for 10 days, and I've already used it 3 times. It's those simple tools. So long story short, after Robert passed, I became president of the United Nations Association, co-founder of LLC with Revolutionary Conversations, Mark and Noel, co-creator of the 2016 World Peace Conference, and then I meet through Mark and you and your podcast, you. How can I find any better ideas but be out there? And you said it today. You said, when you want to be discovered, make yourself available. Get out there. And I thought, we have to do the world a bit of good. And so there you go. That's about a nutshell of where I am.
And that's amazing. I mean, your story is just so fascinating. When Mark said, you need to talk with Barbara, I went and looked you up and went, oh, Now I'm scared. She's not going to talk to me. But here we are. And we, you know, off the radio, we have some great conversations. So, I mean, it's just, you know, things happen the way they're supposed to happen. But you're absolutely right. I mean, we cannot kind of, what is that old saying, or maybe it's an old motto, I don't know, you know, don't hide your light under a bushel or something like that. It never made much sense to me. Until I finally discovered that if you have something to say, and we all do, if you don't actually say it or put it out there in some way, nobody's going to hear you. And that spark of brilliance or wisdom just kind of died. It withered up in your soul. So you really do need to share, you know, your experiences, your wisdom, your grace, your dignity, whatever it is that you've got, whoever you are, find a way to share these things. You know, not necessarily be hectoring or hammering. Exactly. And too many people take that as, well, you know, I've got an opinion and I'm going to state it and you just have to deal with it. No, that's not how it works, and that's not persuasion, is it? But I wanted to go back to how you discover persuasion, because you were mentored by Edward Bernays, who was basically the father of PR. So how did that happen, Barbara? I mean, that's got to be another great story.
There are amazing miracles. I decided, I was a teacher early on. My mother, when I was born, said, "You will be a teacher." And I said, "Okay." And my grandfather said, when I was a little tiny girl, "You will be a peacemaker." These are influences that are in your DNA. My grandfather immigrated from Hungary to be here to avoid World War I. And if he wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't be here today. So think about the miracles of your life and appreciate them. So in 1985, or maybe it was 83, I ran for political office. At the end of my teaching career, I said, "I've done everything. I've been appointed to the Department of Education in Washington. I created the National Alliance of Business in Santa Barbara, created the Industry Education Council. I've been a keynote speaker. I've worked with educators, and I've helped them inspire their students. I've been a demonstration teacher. What's next?" And I said, "Well, Bill Cerrone is a candidate for school superintendent of schools. I'll be a superintendent of schools candidate." Why did I want to do that? Because the early 80s, women were not running for political office. Boy, has that changed in these years. Look at the latest election. When I saw an NPR and PBS, and I saw all the women who were elected, I said, "Thank you, God, because the women's hearts are what we need." But in 1983, when I ran for political office, I was a novice. The mayor of Santa Barbara was a woman. She was my mentor. And then out of my newspaper articles that were talking about Barbara Gunn is running for superintendent of schools, the city of Chamber of Commerce, Santa Barbara Chamber of Commerce, endorsed me. It was like, what? I'm really a candidate here. And my wonderful newspaper increased my people who were volunteering to help me. And out of the blue comes this woman with her two sons who had just moved to Santa Barbara. She was the past PR person for Playboy, if you can imagine. And she says, "I'll help you with your campaign." And I said, "You're on. Let's do it." Well, we did everything from come to the beach and eat hot dogs, and we'll talk about why Barbara should be your superintendent of schools, to fabulous news releases. And when I didn't win, and I didn't run to win, I ran be an inspiration to women to run for political office. She said, "Barbara, I'm glad you didn't win because you are a PR natural." I said, "Well, I have a whole bunch of degrees. I have a suitcase full of degrees." She said, "Perfect. That's all you need." But guess what? Edward Bernays is now 94, and he's going to be doing his last public relations workshop in New York. Well, all my money had been spent on my campaign, so what do I do? In fact, I have to thank American Express. I will tell them that they were the inspiration that got me to New York with Andrea. I took my American Express card out and I said, "Come on, Andrea, we're buying two tickets to New York. We'll stay in the best hotel and we'll pay for this workshop with Edward Bernays." It was love at first sight. He fell in love with Andrea and me, and I fell in love with him. I fell in love with his passion for making this world a better place, for realizing that you have to understand we have a responsibility as PR people to the publics we depend on. We have to know that public relations increases the awareness of the publics, of the benefits of your product or service. Well, for the next 12 years, I think he died at 106, he became my mentor. On his 100th birthday, again, American Express, I took my American Express card to the airport and I said, get me a ticket to San Francisco, where he was on vacation. And I said, I'm going to go with Edward Bernays. And I got it. I rented a limo. We went around San Francisco in that limo for 6 hours and talked about what is public relations. I am the most lucky person to on the planet to have Edward Bernays as my tutor, to have Robert Mueller, drrobertmueller.org, as my mentor for 17 years, teaching me everything there was to know about peace, moving to Costa Rica with him, learning about the University for Peace, the first peace university on the planet, and then meeting Mark Fowler at one of my workshops, and he became my dear friend, my co-writer, and that's how you become irresistible to the world that really, really, really needs you.
I love that story. And as you know, I'm a social media marketing expert. I'm going to call myself an expert. If anybody wants to argue, you can email me and I'll argue with you about it. But
absolutely. You are an expert, Denise, and I have only known you a short year, and you are an expert. And people, call yourself an expert. Do you know what the media is looking for? Experts.
Experts. That's exactly right. But that leads me to my next question, because, I mean, you have learned these really valuable lessons, and everything you just said about getting your product and your service and persuasion, that holds true today with social media. In fact, I would argue that it's more important on social media to really kind of follow along with the teachings that you learn, because, again, it's viral. You can offend people so quickly. I mean, the political climate on social media right now is toxic beyond endurance. I stay out of it. I can't stand it. It actually makes my stomach hurt. I try to stay out of it. But on the opposite side of that, I'm always trying to be positive, upbeat, sometimes a little goofy, mm-hmm. depends on my mood.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you
mm-hmm.
have to be silly to, you know, kind of lighten the load for other people. But I guess my real question here, if I quit meandering around, is what lessons did you learn from you know, those experiences with Edward Bernays that people can translate now into the new kind of social media that is online and it's pervasive, it's everywhere. Can't avoid it. You might as well learn from it. So what advice would you give there?
Well, it's always about understanding your product, understanding the benefit of your nonprofit, understanding what it is that you're offering to the world. How would the public interest be served? If you have something that the public will benefit from, and I'll give you a real quick example. When the United Fruit Company went to Edward Bernays, and they were in Costa Rica, and they had banana trees everywhere. And believe me, banana trees grow in Costa Rica in our little farm. We had banana trees. I had fresh bananas every day because they love the climate, the warm, humid, beautiful, moist, and they just grow like crazy. So they went to Edward Bernays and they said, Edward Bernays, we're not selling enough bananas, and bananas taste so good. And he said, well, do you know what's in a banana? And they said, no. So he hired the Presbyterian Hospital in New York to study the impact of bananas on the human body. The research found that the banana had carbohydrates easily digested, even those with celiac disease and cystic fibrosis. These findings were news. They were published in the pediatric journals. And guess who made bananas so popular? Gerber's baby food. Why?
Gerber's.
They started
right.
Gerber's.
Right.
They started putting
exactly.
the bananas in apple juice. Apple strain in peaches. And when I was raising my children, this is before I got into PR, I was thinking, why do these peaches have bananas in them? Why do these pears have bananas in them? Well, that was Edward Bernays. His campaigns were built on the use of authority, the authority of the Presbyterian Hospital in New York, reasons of tradition against emotional appeals that others might formulate. Bananas? Why would anybody eat a banana? That's an emotional appeal. But based on the findings of the Presbyterian Hospital in New York, the United Fruit Company blossomed, and they thanked Edward Bernays. That's a real positive example of how you think through it's almost like you think through what is going to help you understand your audience. First, you understand your audience. Second, you understand your product or your service and the benefits and how it helps the responsibility. You have a responsibility to the publics that you depend on. I think that's out the window for many people today, but you and I preaching long enough, maybe they'll get it. Understand you have a responsibility to your publics. And, you know, I see all these commercials for these smokeless or smoking contraptions. We have a responsibility to show the effect.
Yeah,
vaping, that's the word. And
right.
So there you go.
Right.
If you want to stop vaping, you don't just start complaining about the people who are doing it, but you start the research to show how vaping restricts certain parts of the body, restricts your brain, whatever it does. And then you teach those things, and then they can decide if they want those effects or not.
Exactly, like smoking. I mean, you know, I come from a family of smokers. I have never smoked. As I shared with you guys yesterday on a conference call, I don't understand the logic of it. It does not make a bit of sense for me to take a lit piece of paper tamped, you know, with something tamped in it, you know, set it on fire, suck it into your lungs. It's not logical. I don't understand it, so I've never done it. But not only that, the Surgeon General, you know, warned, you know, on the packages,
right,
it's always in there. The thing is, if you want to quit smoking, I think you need to use those powers of persuasion and even research on yourself. Yeah, it's one thing to say, I'm just not going to smoke anymore. It's another thing to say, what does a black lung really look like? You know, what does emphysema look like?
Bingo.
So, you know, once you take that, you know, those steps and, you know, educate yourself, I think you have a better chance of going, I'm not going to smoke anymore, or whatever it is.
And it's not easy to give up smoking. I have read reports that say it's easier to give up heroin than it is to give up smoking, because the addictive drugs that they put into the tobacco are so powerful that they do several things that make your brain not function in logical ways. It makes your brain function in the harmony that you feel when you drag on a cigarette. Now, I've read that in research, but did that stop me from smoking in college, which was cool to smoke in college? And so gave it up after I got married and got pregnant because I got sick. That's how bad smoking is. But I had to get pregnant in order to give up smoking. And a lot of people, they just start right after they're done being pregnant. It's like, what is this about smoking? It's not even a pretty smell that you're left with. There's nothing glamorous about smoking.
No. And it's interesting that happens because, you know, I am rarely out in public. And last night, yeah, I had an office chair that I put on Craigslist, and a guy came by, you know, early evening and picked it up. And I had, you know, put it out on the front porch, so I don't like strangers in my home. Listen, Barbara, the minute I opened that door, I smelled cigarette smoke on him, and I kind of recoiled a bit because it was so strong. And, you know, I don't care if you smoke. It's not my business. It's really not my business. But what did happen was I had a physical reaction, and I started sneezing. I'm allergic now to cigarette smoke. And nice guy, we stood out there, and we chatted for a while, but I kept thinking, does he know he stinks? I bet he doesn't. So, you know, there's that.
And
it just happened after we had that conversation about smoking.
Right. Interesting. Well, you know, there's going to be people in your life that you can't do much more than just give them a compliment on something that they have that's beautiful. Like when I'm in a gas station or something, and I'll see a lady, I'll give you an example, because you can't do anything about this fellow who's smoking, but you can thank him for taking the chair in the meeting.
No, he was a very nice man.
Many happy years joy like I have. And that gives him a little power maybe to feel better about himself and maybe not to have the next cigarette, because they've shown that if people feel good about themselves, they take longer hours between cigarettes. So, you know, maybe you did a lot for him last night. You never know.
I didn't mention it to him at all. I just was having these mental observations because when I started sneezing, mm-hmm. I said, gee, I'm so sorry. I don't think I'm allergic to anything.
Well, you did
anything,
the right
but,
thing.
And he just
you
laughed.
You did the right thing.
Not for me to call him out.
Mm-mm. No, I would never. I wouldn't even take a chance on that. But what I was going to
say is
when you see something like that and you can't say much, but you can wish them well, and that's about it. May you have a healthy life. That's all you can say, and go in the house. And then whatever, may your life
not
be better.
It's not my business.
Yeah, right.
I'm not even sure how we got on that conversation. we wandered off the reservation a bit there.
Oh, but it's not your fault, because you were probably being channeling Edward Bernays, because there was one big regret in Edward Bernays' later years. And we talked about that on that last tour I took with him at 100 years in San Francisco. The biggest regret he had was he got people to smoke. And I'm talking about women. Women were smoking in the closets. They were not allowed to smoke in public. The cigarette industry went to Edward Bernays and said, Edward, women are smoking in the closet. They want to smoke in public, but they're not able to. It's a faux pas. So Edward says, well, okay, if you got the money, I'll tell you how to do it. And he was not inexpensive. And so they had the money. And so what he did on Easter Sunday in New York, when the beautiful outfits of these gorgeous society women were parading down Fifth Avenue, he let them have cigarettes, free cigarettes, and they smoked in public. From that day forward, women were smoking cigarettes in public. And that's why the upswing and cigarette sales started after Edward Bernays got on that campaign. In the car, in the limousine that night, he said, if I had one wish, it would be that I did not work for the cigarette industry. I am so disappointed. And now I have to try to reverse it. And so he was working in the reverse, showing people the downside of smoking. And so that's public relations. You can almost do something that is harmful through public relations if you have a desire to increase the products that you're selling. And I could give you examples, but right now I'm not going to go there, because we want to really focus on those products and services that really understand they have a responsibility to the publics that depend on those products or services. And Edward Bernays always would say, what are the benefits to the publics that you depend on, and how do you increase their awareness? And another example, which he's proud of, you know, they didn't allow beer to be sold in grocery stores. Why? Because they didn't allow, as many grocery stores, to put beer in. They didn't even have alcohol in grocery stores. So he said, what about if you have the drink of moderation? So he had these sound bites, the drink of moderation. And beer became the drink of moderation, and that was the start of getting alcohol in grocery stores. So they had the beer in the grocery store. There you go.
Now I have a quick question. I've never really understood where the term hard alcohol came from. So beer would be considered a soft alcohol? Do you think that has some bearing?
Absolutely. Beer was considered the drink of moderation.
All right. Now I just figured it out. Gotcha.
There you go. That's where the hard alcohol, I guess how that word caught in there, hard alcohol and the drink of moderation. There's so many things that were done by Edward Bernays to create, you know, opportunities. For instance, the publishing industry went to Edward and said, Edward, we're not selling enough of the books of these fabulous authors. And he said, well, where are books? Where do books hang out? They said libraries. And then he said, why are they in libraries? And he said, because they have bookshelves. So what does he do? He convenes this International Conference of Architects and shows pictures of the modern home has bookshelves for the fabulous books that we all should be reading. And there you go. That's why we have bookshelves full of books in our homes, because of Edward Bernays.
You're kidding me. That is amazing. Wow.
That's public
so
relations.
We can blame IKEA on Edward Bernays, I take it. Thank you.
Oh, there's so much I can tell you. And you know, but you know, it's so interesting because Mark and I talk about Edward Bernays, Mark Fowler, my co-author with Noel, and we talk about, well, how can we take this revolutionary conversation, the tools you need for the success you want, and step into the path of those people who are just miserable because they don't know how to have a conversation that doesn't end up in a fight. And so these people who are starting to really understand that you can have a revolutionary conversation, and revolutionary in this sense is change. If you look up the definition of revolutionary, it means change. And so Mark and I were talking about, how can we change your conversation to change your world? And all of a sudden we started doing these workshops, change your conversation, change your world, with the tools, you know, that we have in our book. These fabulous tools that make the communication effectiveness for everybody. We all learned how to talk. Our parents said dog, cat, mom, dad, mommy, daddy. But did they teach you how to talk to mommy, daddy? Did they not tell you, shut up now, I'm talking? They didn't teach you how to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. My favorite word was always no, just so you know. My mother insists that my very first word was not mom, dad, dog, cat. It was no. And she said I meant it. Nothing much has changed.
But you probably said that you were so cute. I can imagine you were so cute that they let you get away with that. No, no, no. But it's probably, well, you learn by example. What can I say?
True.
Yeah.
So, I know we've had conversations where you're talking about change your conversation, change your world, and it is really important. To me, having a conversation more often is me just shutting my mouth and listening. And I think that's a big, big part of having a great conversation. But I know that you've said that, you know, this particular topic, change your conversation, change your world. You gave me an example where it worked with your board of directors for the UNA. So can you share that example?
Well, you know, we used to have long, drawn out board meetings. And then all of a sudden, I said, okay, one of my board members, the treasurer, Gail Gillies, said, I'm going to read your book. I gave everybody a copy of the book. She came into the next board meeting and she said, we need a workshop. This is not as easy as it sounds. Stop, help, ask, risk, explore. We need the Revolutionary Conversation Workshop. Mark Fowler, Noel, and I got together and we did this. Change your conversation, change your world. And all of a sudden, my board meetings are now efficient. They last 1 hour. We do as Oprah says, what does she say? She always says something like, what's our most important thing we have to do today? She just comes in and says, and what matters? And so we get right down to it now. We have our overview, and then we get right down into the revolutionary conversation. If somebody comes up with an idea, I stop and I say, help, I need a little help. Tell me more, which is ask. And then they talk about it for a few minutes, and then the board agrees or doesn't agree, and we go forward. And so now my board says, we're going to have revolutionary conversation board meetings. Some of my board members have made so much progress in their personal lives, in their businesses, in their home relationships, especially in their businesses. I can't even get into their lives now. Their businesses have increased. One of my board members had just run for political office and she lost, and she was as depressed as could be. And I said, I've been waiting for you. You've got the talent that we need. This woman is now bringing in thousands of dollars a month in a PR business using revolutionary conversations. Not only is my board doing better as a board, we are inspired, we work, and we have conversations, but their personal businesses are booming. So There you go. That's all because of this one workshop where we had a Democrat and a Republican stand up in front of the audience and talk about the impossible. How are you going to be friends when you're losing them because you are on different sides of the political arena? And they learned how to listen to each other. But we took a neutral topic. We took immigration. One was for it and one was against. But when they...
Not neutral. Sorry. Not even close to neutral.
and then they started to hear the other side from the other person. And at the end of this conversation with Mark skillfully leading them through it, now ask, what does that mean? Understand where they're coming from. They ended up hugging, and we have it on tape. And I'd love to make a video to show people, how do you stand in the impossible? How do you have that conversation that enables you to hear the other side and not react? We get so busy reacting to things rather than inspiring ourselves to slow down, pause. As Lynn Kitchen said, my mom, she's 96, and she has, you know, things she wants to say. And my sister, I shouldn't tell you all this, but her sister doesn't like those things sometimes. And so she said, you know, we have peaceful dinners now because I say pause, not stop, pause and listen. And they do. And all of a sudden, this is Thanksgiving time coming. Pause and listen. Don't react. This show
right,
should be
aired right
for every family that hasn't been getting along, and Thanksgiving is, you know, kind of mellowed out with alcohol and food. But what if you really got to know those people at the dinner table with you? What if you went around and you kind of had conversations? It just is an exciting time, and we have to be friends. We need those mentors, and we need each other now more than ever.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, here's the thing about these conversations. And my dog is losing her mind for some reason. If you hear her, I apologize. There must be somebody outside that she wants to visit with.
Probably.
Abby, stop. But I have found through trial and error and just, you know, sticking my foot in my mouth and going, well, that didn't feel good, that if I will, instead of knee-jerk when I hear something that just doesn't sit right with me, and we hear it every day or we read it every day, there's always going to be something you're like, no, that's wrong. You know, you just get all up in your high horse.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, if you let it sit, this has been my experience, and I try to do this all the time, just let it sit. Let it percolate. Take a hot shower. Turn yourself into a cabbage in the shower. Think about it there, because now you're no longer concentrating on the negativity. And you're going to find a different point of view or multiple points of view if you just let it sit instead of just going, no, that's wrong, you're wrong, you know, I can't believe you said that kind of thing. Let it sit. It may be that you're never going to agree with their viewpoint, but does that make them a mass murderer? No. So be logical about it.
Mm-hmm. And you can't always know how that person received the inspiration or the way they are.
Right.
You haven't walked in their shoes. And I always feel like I feel in my heart that people are basically good, but they're scared. They have a fear component somewhere that if people don't believe what they say, they're not real. And there are some people who have grown up in families that fight all the time. Well, where are they going to learn how not to fight? They have to take workshops. They have to be inspired, figure out how to have a different way of being. So many caregivers on our planet are so frustrated. So what I did a column when my late husband during his last year was not himself. So I started writing the Caregiver's Corner so that I could teach people how to accept, not upset. Accept, not upset. A simple little slogan. And so I wrote this column about how you can accept what is with a smile. The smile is the most contagious everything you do on the planet. With everything that else is out there, your smile is the most contagious thing you can do to create harmony and world peace. And if you look at a person who's going through early stages of dementia or a little memory loss, the last thing you want to do is look grouchy, because they pick it up and they're grouchy. But if you're happy, they're happy. I remember Robert's last birthday. He died on the eve of the International Day of Peace that he created. But his last birthday, on his 88th birthday, he was not Robert anymore, but he was fabulous, just so loving. And we had a birthday party for him at this beautiful restaurant on the beach. He became so lively because we had music and people who loved him. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is so perfect. So don't exclude these people, include them. And that's what I'm thinking Revolutionary Conversations does for a person. It helps you become more inclusive. It also helps you walk away if it's not going to happen. You can exit left. And I always tell people the first step of our Revolutionary Conversations is to stop. Why do we stop at a stop sign? Because we don't go forward until it's safe. Same thing in a conversation. You need to have a conversation for clarity, and that's where you stop. And then you develop an environment of support and teamwork with help, and then ask, risk, and explore. And so that leads me to one more thing I wanted to share with your audience. I'm starting with Mark. We're writing a new book on peace. And I'm thinking, okay, engineering of consent of the publics we depend on. And how do we get the publics to understand what we have through the authority, through tradition? Well, what if I start the Power of Peace podcast? And I allow myself to have interviews with people when I am talking about peace and the Power of Peace podcast on the revolutionaryconversations.net website. If you go there, you will see across the bar at the top, Power of Peace. I've interviewed Mary Morrissey. I've interviewed Bernie Siegel. I've interviewed Mark Fowler. I've interviewed these fabulous people who are inspiration. Now, if they don't think that I can believe in peace, what about these people? So I asked the first question, what does peace mean to you? And now I have the Power of Peace podcast. There's my authority. There's the tradition now. People are asking me, when's the next Power of Peace podcast? So I just did Philip Helmick. He's the director of peace for the Shift Network. They have thousands of followers. So if I tweet out that Philip's on now, go there and listen to him. He said some amazing, beautiful words about peace. It puts you in harmony with your soul. And it's about being in harmony with the world. That's how we move our world from fear and war to peace and love.
But it also trickles down to almost a cellular level. I mean, we're talking global here, but peace and happiness and serenity. Serenity is a big word for me. I wasn't always serene. I was always a bit of a snot, to be honest with you. That's just the way I was when I was young.
Uh-huh.
And I'm laughing
That's
now, but
okay.
It wasn't funny.
I still love you.
Oh, thank you.
That's what your mother would say, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, for the longest kind of time, I always thought my middle name was Denise because I was known as that damn Denise. You know, it was just, you never know. But yeah, serenity is something that has, it was actually pretty funny. I really did think my middle name was Denise for a while. But the thing is, serenity was hard won, hard fought for me. I mean, it's, you know, or maybe it's the other way, hard fought, hard won. But once I got to the point where I understood that serenity is something that is so important for me, because in order for me to convey my thoughts, my gifts, my business, whatever it is that I'm selling, whatever it is that I'm, you know, committing to create, I have to have a certain level of serenity. And that means for me to convey to anybody who is listening to me or who wants to buy products or services from me or work with me, I have to really understand myself before I can understand your needs, right?
Wow.
I think that's pretty important.
Wow. That's exactly what Philip said in his interview. He said, peace begins
with me. Oh, really? I haven't listened to it yet.
Yes. Oh, I just sent it to you this morning. Peace begins with me and starts with a conversation. And he said,
right,
if you have peace inside, then you can bring peace to the world. But I have to tell you that I think your serenity and peace. Now, why did we call this Power of Peace podcast the Power of Peace podcast? Because think of this world, the power of peace. If we really had the power of peace on this planet or even in your city, next week, my first interview on Monday is going to be with the founder of the Cities of Peace, and that is in Dayton, Ohio. And if you have a city of peace and your city council believes that we can have peace in our city, harmony in our city, if you believe you can have peace in your house, in your home, I have a peace corner. My late husband and I, on October 24th, the anniversary of the United Nations, which is going to be 75 years old in 2020, if you believe that you can have peace in your home, so we created the peace corner. Peace corners. What if you had a corner in your house with a peace corner, little plaque that says, this is a place of peace, where you can be at peace, where if your mother's yelling at you and you don't think you were wrong, you can sit in the peace corner and maybe the conversation will open up and you can have a peaceful conversation. Or it's the neutral zone for the mom who's just sick and tired of her kids. She can go to the peace corner, and that means, don't bother me, I'm in the peace corner. And the school classroom, instead of having time out, we send the kids to the peace corner. There's 4,000 peace corners right now on our planet. And you can go to Barbara Gahn, GAUGHENMULLER-Mueller, and find and go for peace corners. And you'll see these lovely children coming up to me and accepting their peace corners. And that's what I believe, that we can have peace in our home, but it begins with the intention of peace. You have to look for peace. You have to be responsible for peace. You know, we just can't say, oh, darn, there's no peace on the planet. No, you have to be searching for it in your conversation. Maybe you're the peace that person who just came in your life needs right then and there. Maybe you're the inspiration. In public relations, we say, how do you inspire? How do you have enthusiasm for the product? Understand your product, just like Edward Bernays did with bananas. And I think if we had more people understanding the value that they bring to the world, and I'll go back to your quote, sitting on your wisdom and gifts doesn't do the world a bit of good. Denise Griffiths quote, truth, and I do these workshops for women who want to start their businesses. And I say, listen, you're not going to have good luck sitting in your most comfortable chair and expecting the world to come to you. You have to let the world know you have this beauty of wisdom, this talent, this gift that the world's waiting for. And how do you do that? Well, first you could hire Denise Griffiths, or you could use social media to your benefit. Understand how to do social media. Begin with the benefits and the program, the validity that you know, you have to get it out there into the real world. That's my business.
Barbara, that's a big thing. Yeah, and I know that about you. But see, that's a huge thing, and I don't know if this is a gender thing, but I have noticed that women in particular have a hard time kind of tooting their own horn. They will say to me, I don't know how to tell people what I do. I don't know. I don't want to come across as being a braggart. And you don't have to, but you can simply let people know that these are your gifts. You know, you've got gifts to share. You can solve their pain points. There are very classic ways to do it.
Well, I'm going to tell you a secret. I just started something. I'm going to pick it up right here. It's in my folder in front of me. I just started something because I, too, am guilty of that. I feel, I just can't go out there and say, you better hire me to do the next inspirational keynote address for your company, because I will inspire your company to be better than they've ever thought possible. I will inspire them in order to make them understand that each of them is contributing to the end line of our product and to the inspiration that everybody needs. So I started writing down what people say to me. I was just on the Happiness Hour, and Lionel Kitchen said, you're my energy soulmate. You're a gift to everyone to help them understand themselves and create a better world. I started writing these down. And when I wrote what were saying about me, I started to believe it. Now, I can't just go out there and say that, but maybe I can weave it in to something you know, just kind of in a casual conversation. People like another gal said to me, people experience more of who they are and their destiny when they're with you. And you understand something about life, and it's what people are looking for. Then Dr. Mao, my darling Dr. Acupuncturist, Dr. Mao said, I felt really good today when I started the day with you. When somebody connects with you, you're a power source, and they can't stop glowing and growing. You're like a generator for happiness. Write those things down that people say about you, you know, and then you'll begin to believe them, right?
And I'm glad you said that because it's really important. In fact, Mark Fowler and I were having a bit of an email conversation after you got off the phone yesterday. No, I'm sorry, it was Noel that we were on the phone with yesterday.
Uh-huh, Noel, yes.
And we continued
nice
our conversation. Right. And
right.
Then we had an email conversation. And this has always been a problem with me. I will get these fantastic compliments from people. I'm like, oh, thanks. I promptly forget about them. I don't take them to heart. I don't write them down. You know, I just kind of blow them off, which I have come to understand is actually insulting to the person who gave me this tremendous compliment. And Mark and I had a wonderful email conversation. I said, you know, I'm learning that I'm not very gracious about accepting these things. And, you know, thank you for kind of guiding me through this because I need to learn to not just go, oh, that was great. Thank you very much. And then off I go to the next, you know, stomp out the next fire. Write them down. You're absolutely right. Write them down, kind of hug them to your heart, and understand that people see you very differently than you see yourself.
That's
brilliant.
Beautiful. Thank you. That's beautiful. You know, I started this on July 30th, 2018, so I only have about 5 pages, but I do now have my wonderful tablet right in front of me. I have a yellow pad of paper, and it's right here in front of me. And my friend, my son said, Mom, just share your wisdom, tell your life story and how you mentor others and teach them that they too can become mentors. The wisdom, my late husband would always say, don't die with your wisdom in you. You are an encyclopedia of wisdom. Put it down on paper, dictate it on your iPhone, let the people know your wisdom. And I can't agree with anything more than that. And I just started this to put these ideas down on paper. Now, I have to go back to the engineering of consent. It may sound like it's easy, from inspiration, wisdom, inspiration, knowledge, and all of the other 5 steps. And again, I'll repeat them. It comes with awareness, information, persuasion to do something. And number 4 is reassurance. So once you've got your audience, how do you reassure them? Once you've got your base of people who are buying your product or service, how do you reassure them? That's the key. And then lastly, you evaluate and start over again. So it goes awareness, information, persuasion, reassurance, and then lastly, evaluation and start over again. So awareness. Where do you begin in awareness? We can start on Twitter. You can do all sorts of things. But let's go to how do you get your persuasion to do something? It takes 7 knocks between the awareness, inspiration or information to persuasion. 7 knocks. How many people give up after 1 phone call? Oh, I called him. He didn't like it. You didn't even call him twice. You only called him once. And you made that as a decision that he doesn't want your product or your service. You don't have to only call. You have to be on the radio. That's what I'm doing for the Power of Peace podcast. I do editorials. Don't lose your friends because you're not on the same political bandwidth. I write for Thrive Global. That's 4 knocks. I do radio shows. I don't care who calls me. I will do a radio show. I have this one fellow in Kansas, Barbara Don Mueller, the Power of Peace is now. And I just get on his show and I just have a best time because I know somebody out there needs that inspiration. So it takes 7 knocks between awareness to persuasion to do something. And then you get to the reassurance. You send them an email. Thank you for buying my product. If you're tweeting, ask people, have you tried Revolutionary Conversation? Send me a note. Let me know how it worked for you. Like Lynn Kitchen, again, I go back to her because she said, Barbara, I've only had your book for 10 days And I've used it 3 times in the most amazing ways with my board of directors, with the phone conversation with a partner, and with my family. 10 days. And she said, I was really lucky because I had just taken a Mary Morrissey workshop and I was flying home and I had the book in my hand. If you're an author out there, like Dan Pointer, who was my number one client, Patricia Bragg, the city of Santa Barbara, each one of them, I had to think, what is the benefit of this product or service? And whenever I worked with Patricia, who is now a multimillionaire, she had never been on the cover of a magazine. I said, Patricia, do you know how to get on the cover of a magazine? And she said, absolutely not. Well, anyway, I helped her get there, but you had to, Devin Knox, between awareness to persuasion to do something. And I was like you, I was very determined that she would be on the cover of magazines. And by the time our campaign was done, she was on the cover of 3 magazines. And you can't miss this woman. She's on every Bragg product. And long story short, Dan Pointer was an ebook guru. And he said, how do I get people to believe in ebooks? And I said, start the Global Ebook Awards. Start the Global Ebook Awards. Well, pretty soon every one of his ebooks were flying off the internet and people were into ebooks. And so you just think, what do you need to do to bring your product or service into the world's daily conversation? Okay, I'm going to give you a shortcut. It takes 7 knocks to go from awareness to persuasion, unless your best friend tells you, and then it's only 1 knock. If the best friend says, oh, you've got to hire Denise, but she did amazing work. Yeah, we're on. There you go.
And it's true. And, you know, what you're doing, but I think what a lot of people don't understand or don't even think about is that every single one of us has an audience. It doesn't matter if you're living in your house all by yourself. You're your audience. You're watching yourself. You're listening to yourself. You're having these internal conversations. When you're out in the grocery store, you have an audience. I think I've shared with you, I am a highly committed introvert. I cannot go out in public without people wanting to talk to me. I must look much friendlier than I actually am. I can't figure that out. If you know,
I'm sure you're on the radio,
you have an it's crazy. When you're on the radio, when you're on social media, you have an audience. So you can't just kind of vomit your thoughts all over the place. You have to be consistent with your messaging. I mean, if you're doing that, you're going to pick up an audience you don't like.
But it's pretty cute. Go for it.
But it's true. You know, so you have to really be aware of how you're presenting to yourself and to the world at large. And over time, you know, your public relations, your social media becomes kind of a long game. You know, you're consistent with your messaging. You're consistent with sharing, curating, you know, helping your audience understand, solving pain points. And after a while, people look at you as an authority. It doesn't take long. But you can't wander off the reservation and show bikini pictures of you instead of saying, you know, this is how you work in WordPress. So
right.
You have to be very aware of what you're doing all the time. Yeah.
Absolutely, Denise. Be who you are. Be that. I remember I was in the audience when one of my latest clients was, I was there and he was doing a speech and he saw me and he jumped off the stage and he said, will you do my PR? Well, I didn't even say 4 words to him. And he knew who I was just by who I was. I was on the Montel Williams show with one of my clients. He thought I was the person that was going to be the next guest. Dress who you are. Be who you are. And you will become that magnet, that inspiration, that wants people to hire you. With that, I say,
absolutely.
Denise, I love being on your show. I could be on your show for another 3 hours. I never thought the hour would go so fast. I'm unbelievable.
Oh,
I'm just
thank you.
Blown away.
Well, I often tell people when they're booking, they say, well, how long do we need to speak? I say 60 minutes, and there's always bit of a pause, and I'll tell them, look, it's the fastest hour on the internet, so don't worry about it.
Well, I am just so delighted people might check out the things we're talking about.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome.
Well, listen, it has been my pleasure speaking with you, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you shared with our audience. But before we go, where can people find you on the web? And we've mentioned Revolutionary Conversations a couple of times, so let me put that one out there. It's revolutionaryconversations.net. You can find information about Barbara, Mark Fowler, and Noel McDonald, and you can buy the book over there. So where can people find you?
UNASB.org, where I am over and over again, robertmueller.org, powerofpeace.org. We have many ways that they can find us. And find the book.
Excellent.
Once you read that book.
Yeah, buy the book. I have the book. Listen,
I'm so glad.
But we ran out of time. We're still recording, but we're not streaming any longer. Do you have any particular success practices or spiritual practices that you do first thing in the morning before you get out of bed without fail?
I don't get out of bed to begin with. I get into my mind and I thank God for the day. I do a meditation while I'm still warm and cozy because it's been really cool in the mornings here in Santa Barbara. And I kind of think about, what do I want to accomplish today? What would make me happy at the end of the day? And I kind of put that out there. And sometimes, like yesterday, was a really hard day for me. I had my teeth cleaned in the morning. I had so many things to do. And I was just kind of tired. And I thought, oh, how am I going to do that show tomorrow? Well, I know. I'll go to bed. So I went to bed at 7:30, and I was up at 4:30 California Pacific time. But I know sleep is the magic for me. I can have a really tiring day, and I went to exercises. I was pooped out after that. When I got home, I said, well, there, I can't do much. I cannot even prepare, but I'm going to bed. So I went to bed, and I went to sleep, and I woke up with such energy after the meditation, the plan that I have for the day. And then I came in and I started to read again the editorial I wrote about Edward Bernays when he died. I read the reviews of the books for Revolutionary Conversations. I looked at the three questions that I ask on every podcast. I looked at our article, Peace and World Harmony by Mark and me, how we all see peace in different ways. I was so ready for you today because I was so inspired by the work that I've done. So my inspiration sometimes is to review the work that I've already done. I looked at the 7,500 ideas of Robert Mueller. I have 12 volumes sitting on the side of my desk over here. And so I was so ready for you. And then I said, well, what can I tell her? And so I wrote down the full online strategy of what it takes to go from awareness, information, persuasion, and reassurance to evaluation. And then I used some of the clients to help me do that. And I didn't even repeat the one about the city of Santa Barbara hiring me and how we did that. But I did use the one for Global eBooks. And, you know, so I became who I am once again by reviewing. Keep those good things that you have people say about you. Have them around you. And like Danielle said to me, your energy and enthusiasm is infectious. And so I wrote that down. And then you called. That was how it began.
You know, all that boils down to what I think about life, and that is the magic is within us. Just don't lose sight of that spark.
Wow. I'm writing that down. The magic is within us. And you always have to have a yellow pad on your table because there's so much wisdom that goes by. The magic is within us. That is so beautiful.
Don't lose sight of that spark. And I just made that up. Well, listen, Barbara, thank you again. This has been absolutely delightful. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you, my friend. This has been a wonderful way to spend an hour.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.